their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
It's good to have you back, Rick. It's good to have our listeners here. Once again, Happy New Year to everyone. What is going on these days? What's happening? Other than crazy events in world,
I don't think we'll go there.
But you know,
we're going to talk about photography.
Let's tune out for the next 30 minutes and sit back and enjoy us ramble on something that isn't current event related, other than our own current events.
Yeah. Well, one thing is we did get out and get a shoot in that was kind of fun.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that.
Colorado Mountains.
Just a little fun there.
Yeah, a little bit of, you know, late day shooting, including a little bit of astro stuff. And we'll talk about how we screwed that up, but still pulled out some photos.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, you know, we were talking about in this last couple of weeks, you know, we've been getting some of us, you know, either getting new lenses, we've tested new, you know, it's like I've been slowly, you know, acquiring all the native prime lenses, not all of them, but many of the native prime lenses for the Z cameras. And there was one lens that I was sort of on the fence about, and that was the new 20 millimeter 1.8, because it's a real, I have the 20 millimeter 1.8 G lens for F mount, which is, you know, perfectly usable. And the reason why I bought that lens a couple of years ago, or more than a couple of years ago now, is primarily for night sky photography. Because as we talked about in our, you know, there was a podcast we did a year ago or whenever, when we talked about night sky photography, the real key to getting good pinpoint stars or Milky Way is to be able to do what some people call short exposure night photography. And by short, we just mean not minutes long, you know, exposures that are 10, 15, maybe 20 seconds. And the two biggest drivers of that are being able to have fast lenses that are wide focal lengths. And that's the reason why a lens like a, you know, we have the 14 to 30 S lens, which is a great lens, but it's an F4 lens, and you're losing that light. And what that means is if you're doing night photography, it means you're constantly bumping up the ISOs, or you have to increase the shutter speeds to longer, you start getting star trail motion.
Yeah, and just to be clear, you know, because in a lot of situations, someone can say, well, can't you just turn the ISO up another notch? And you can. The problem is for night photography, you're already at very high ISOs. And what you're doing with almost any camera out there is, if you're shooting at F4, you're pushing it into territory where, yeah, you can sort of get by, but you've got a lot of noise to overcome, just a lot of noise.
Yeah, it can be messy, because you're usually living, at the very least, you're living around ISO 1600. Yeah. And if you have an F4 lens, now, you know, and that's with shooting at like F2. And so if you add two stops to that, you're now at ISO 6400.
Yeah, which gets you into messy land.
It can be challenging. So I thought about this. I thought about, like, should I get this lens? Why would I have, you know, because it's a specialty lens. We've talked about what lenses we like to shoot with. And 20 isn't one of those focal lengths that we normally gravitate towards, right? I mean, it's just not quite the same as your normal sort of 24, 35, 85 kind of, you know, a 20 millimeter lens is getting pretty wide. And so you've got to have a specific application or use case for it. I mean, they're fun, they're good, and optically they're great. So I thought about it. I thought, well, you know, the Nikon lenses were all discounted for the holidays, so I thought maybe I'll do that. So part of what precipitated our little trip out to the high country was to go somewhere, just to get the heck out of town for a little bit.
Oh yeah.
And and be outside, and the weather has been pretty decent of late. So I brought those two lenses, and then we, because I wanted to compare and look at the difference, and so we can talk about that. But I mean, we went out, we did a little sunset, we found ourselves a nice overlook somewhere that we knew would get relatively dark.
And it was pretty before sunset. I mean, to clarify, we weren't shooting sunset. We were shooting
No.
sunset on other things,
Yeah, I
which is
mean,
a little tip. Don't shoot the sunset. Those are so damn boring
right.
over time. But at any rate, so there was nice light out at times, and we had some of those nice lens-shaped lenticular clouds over some of the distant mountains and stuff. So that was cool. That was
And
cool.
we got the location tip from one of our listeners who joined our holiday show or holiday party. So that was really good. So thanks to Jim Van Hoy, who's local here in Colorado Springs, for reminding us of a nice spot to hit for some evening photography. It was actually very accessible, so that was great. So thank you to him. Weird things happen when you try to switch between, sunset and night. It's a completely different animal. And one of the things we were trying to do as well is that neither of us have done a lot of night shooting. Not just I want to test this lens, but also we haven't done a lot of night sky shooting with the Z mirrorless cameras, with the mirrorless, and it's a challenge in some cases. There's a
I mean,
lot of things you
just
have
to
to
be
change
clear,
up.
we've both done it. It
Yeah.
just, especially with recent events, we've done less of it, but there are some unique challenges with a mirrorless camera. There's no doubt about it. You will find some of those quirks in a hurry, and I think both of us had the same problem where, because we hadn't been doing it and we're a little bit out of practice for it, and practice really matters. Our cameras weren't configured correctly. We really didn't think about it. And so we got out there and we went through, I think, both a succession of things where we were blinding ourselves because of settings. It's like, I'll just fess up and I'll say, I had my camera LCD set for daytime conditions. So it's this bright white thing with black lettering. So it instantly blinded me as I was trying to reconfigure the camera. I got that set so it was flipped, and so it was dark with just some white lettering. And then I had the damn grid lines on in the viewfinder, which also blinded me. I mean, I literally could not see a star or barely even the shape of a mountain outline.
So,
It was just dumb on my part.
normally the biggest challenge with shooting at night is the biggest things are getting your focus right, and then also and then of course composition can be hard. But so exposure is usually your least problematic setting because that's easy to change. You can dial in your settings for exposure pretty easily on most cameras, right? But focus, composition, and then with mirrorless cameras, you've got to deal with the fact that your night vision, you've got to be able to see something in the viewfinder. And if it's an electronic viewfinder using the LCD, it can be really hard. And that light source from the camera is blinding you. And one of the things that I used to do when I was shooting with a DSLR was just to turn the camera off and compose through the viewfinder. Well, or just allow the meter to time out so that there was no light anywhere in the viewfinder. So the illuminated stuff, because that those lights come in and they blind you because it's so dark out. And then focus is a real problem because once it does get dark, it's very difficult for a lot of these cameras to find a subject. So you either need to have a spotlight to focus on an object, usually at some kind of distance, or you need to pre-focus and then just keep your focus at that spot. And that's another thing that's a real challenge with some mirrorless systems, because with the, and this goes into the lenses, with my F-mount lenses, the AF-S G type, I can set the focus while it's still daytime on that lens, put the lens to manual focus and just put a piece of gaffer tape on the lens ring, on the focus ring, and it's locked. I've just locked the focus down. Nothing right. happens. With the Z cameras, there's a little quirk, at least with the Z, Mark One, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And they have this weird little thing. You want to tell us about that, Rick? What happens when you turn off a Z camera and turn it back on?
Well, it will go to a focus point that it picks, and we're not sure exactly how that's done, only that it varies between lenses.
It's more or less infinity, but it's not exactly infinity.
Well, you found one that was at 50 feet, which is a hell of a lot less than infinity. Right.
But the big challenge.
One adapted lens I tried defaulted to what appeared to be a few feet away.
Yeah, right. And that means every time you turn off your camera, which is a very common habit that I have for power saving, it would cause the lens to refocus. And that's a problem.
Right.
So, now, what do you do? You know, if obviously this is know your camera. So we're talking about a situation with Nikon cameras. I don't know. I know that there's been some firmware changes for the Z6 and 7 II that's supposed to preserve the focus distance, but we haven't tried those yet, so we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know if that works if you change lenses. I kind of doubt it, but it would be glorious if it did. But at any rate, you know, that's what we were faced with. I think one of the steps that, you know, makes sense if you're going out and doing astrophotography and you're wanting to use one of these lenses, let's just quickly acknowledge that most people who are really serious about astrophotography buy some of the less expensive manual focus lenses that are 14 millimeter, 15 millimeter lenses. And if you use those, this is easy. You know, you can do the focus in daytime, tape it down, whatever, or just note where it, you know, infinity focus really is, because it's not always where it's marked.
Right.
And that's the solution if you do it a lot. If you do it less frequently, like that's certainly the case for me, I just do it a few times a year. It doesn't make sense for me to buy a lens. But I think an exercise that people ought to do, they're using these cameras, is first see where a lens that you want to use for astrophotography, you know, a faster, wider lens, defaults to. Now, one of the glorious things is I've got a 24-70 2.8 lens. And a magical thing appears to be magic, is
at least with yours,
Nikon lens, yeah, at least with mine, is if you turn the camera off and turn it back on, that lens goes pretty much to infinity. So I was not actually having to focus it. It didn't matter if I was at 24 millimeters or if I had been longer, but I was shooting at 24 and I was getting sharp stars. Ah, great. Don't have to screw with that.
In fact, it's actually a bonus. Because if you bumped your focus, all you'd have to do is turn off the camera and turn it back on again, and it would go back to that infinity spot.
Yeah, so it's a wonderful thing. But we tried a few other lenses. You still had the 14-24 that sometime will go back, and then your new 20 and stuff, and those did not.
Right. And it was interesting when I turned on the 14-24, and it has that focusing distance, you know, because that one has the little LCD display, as does your 24-70. And when I turned the lens on, the focus mark was dead center in the little infinity marking, the little, you know, infinity symbol. But when I focused out on the mountains, and this was in the daytime, you know, I could focus, the actual focus point was at the left edge of the infinity marker. That's where it showed on the camera. And that meant I was just a little bit off. With the 20 millimeter lens, I found it to be focusing, somewhere around 60 feet. Clearly a difference between that and infinity.
Yeah, especially apparent when you're wide open, like you were.
Right, and if you were not wide open, you know, like this is not a normal problem. Most of the time, we're just shooting in daytime. You can use autofocus or whatever you can, and you're going to be stopped down a little bit, so those are not a big deal. But there was enough depth of field problems that I had to stop that down to like f4, f5, 6 to sharpen up what was at infinity because of that focusing distance that it was set to. You know, like I said, I don't know who sets it, but that's where it was. And of course, when I looked at it, you know, it thinks it's more or less at infinity, but it really wasn't. The 24 millimeter 1.8 was pretty close to infinity, not perfect, but awfully close, at least mine. Mm-hmm. So those are things that if you have those lenses, you would want to test them and check it out. So you had your workaround was easy because all you had to do was just turn your camera on. I chose to do something different. What I did was when it was starting to get dark, I set my camera up on the tripod and I set it up. I focused out at infinity, like on the mount, you know, something clearly far enough away, you know, 100 yards or more for a 20 millimeter lens. And then I put the lens into, you know, I flipped the AM switch on the lens to manual. So now the camera's in manual focus. And when you do that, you just have to be careful not to bump the focusing ring. And with, like I said, you can tape it down or do whatever. But with the Z bodies, power management is an issue, especially at night. You know, it's cold. You don't want to run your batteries down. You know, you're doing longer exposures. Mm-hmm. So I left the camera on. I did not turn the camera off. And because it was in manual focus, you know, half pressing the shutter wasn't going to cause the lens to try to refocus or do anything like that. I mean, it's a it's a common problem. You have your focus button set to your shutter release, and you press it halfway to compose, and then your lens starts focusing. So put the camera in manual, and then I just set a bunch of the settings.
If you're using back button focus,
If you're using back button, another reason
why
I use it.
Don't inadvertently hit it. Yeah.
But again, another problem you can have is that if you're set to one of those autofocus modes and it's set to focus priority release mode, and it's dark, your camera will potentially think that the shot is not in focus and it won't release. So putting your camera in a manual focus mode solves all of those problems because it's in release priority. You're not going to change, you know, that just is a thing. But then there's a lot of features in the playback and review and timers that I normally have set for daytime conditions to include things like how long does the image review last and how long does the meter stay? You know, when is the power off delay? You know, normally that's a long thing. You can just shut it to very short settings so that after 5 or 10 seconds of being, you know, it takes the picture, the camera goes into sleep mode. And what I did find is that putting in sleep mode, waking it up, does not refocus the lens.
Yeah,
so that's different from powering it down.
One thing that we should add is, in addition to just concerns about power draw with mirrorless, which, you know, it's not terrible or anything, but you see it in very long exposures. One of the issues that we had is we were cold. Cold. And so the camera was very cold too. So we were just trying to be conscious of that.
And guess what doesn't work so well with gloves? You know, it was really, so there was a bunch of settings. I mean, you started talking about these things. There's settings for the camera and you're right. It's like you have to set up your camera to be a completely different use case. That goes beyond the normal, oh, I'm just changing from shutter priority to, you know, to manual or something like that. I mean, yes, we shoot this in manual most of the time, but it wasn't that. It was all those other little features that we've normally just left set for a certain style of shooting. And there's a lot of things that we had to change. You mentioned the grid lines. The monitor and viewfinder brightness need to be set down to their lowest possible level. Sometimes auto won't, you know, I mean, won't work because that, again, you don't want it to be too bright.
Right.
Setting your viewfinder to display stuff so that you don't have too much clutter in there so that you can attempt to see a little bit of the scene if possible. The power stuff.
Or even subtle things like one of the things I mentioned, you know, that I had set is with the Z's, and it's true with some other brands of recent cameras, you know, they've got Bluetooth connections, you know, so you don't have to use Wi-Fi, which draws more battery. That's great. And one of the cool things you can do with it is you can actually have your camera configured so that even when it's off, if you choose to, you can download images from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that Bluetooth connection is always going and drains very little battery power. And that's how I had mine set. Well, here's the thing. If you turn off your camera with that enabled, you get this big reminder that pops up on the screen for a few seconds, you know, about that being active. And normally I don't care about that. Well, when you get a big white reminder on the back of your LCD, if you flip it off, it blinds you completely.
Right. Another way I set the camera, which is again not a way I normally shoot. Normally I shoot with having the exposure preview, you know, the apply settings to live view, so you get exposure preview in the viewfinder. I actually turned that off so that it would always try to give me the brightest possible scene, because the meter thinks you're underexposed when it's dark like that. It doesn't know any better, and so it'll just be too dark most of the time. I'm not sure how much of a difference that made, but the thing was, is that this was a radically, it was a very strong departure from the way we would normally configure our cameras for use in darn near any other situation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those things are not always easy to find. You know, there's certain things you can put in the iMenu, you know, like if I want to have exposure delay turned on for a, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can toggle those things on and off pretty easily. But it occurred to me as we were driving home, you know, and our hands were frozen. I'll give you another one. Like, I almost never turn image review on, you know, so that the image pops up on the back of the screen when I'm shooting, because it's just annoying. But for the night shots where you're doing stuff in between and you want to check to make sure that each one comes out right, and you can't find the darn button because it's just cold and it's dark and you're wearing gloves, that was a thing that I considered turning on, just auto image review. Again, not a way I would normally shoot.
No, because it can actually cause problems.
Right, and including that battery drain we were talking about if you don't have the timers set to do things. So this got me thinking, and we were talking about it, about this might be a good use case for those user saved settings options in the Nikon cameras.
Right. Right.
The Zs and even some of the DSLRs, like the D750 had this, and some of the mid-tier DSLRs and some of the in both DX and FX, they have these little dial settings where the program manual, you know, that dial, where it says U1, U2, and sometimes U3. So in the case of the Z6 and 7, they have the 1 through 3. Mm-hmm. And those options are cool. They're a blessing and a curse. They allow you to save every setting that's in the camera, including the exposure mode, the shutter speed, I mean, everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can override them while using the camera, of course. But when you turn the camera off or you move the ring back from to a different position and back, it resets everything to that state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, neither you nor me or I like that as a default place.
Right.
I mean, it's just because you can sometimes forget what it was that you were doing. But yeah, I set normally up my camera.
Yeah, normally I have no use for those things.
Right, because you have your camera set the way you want it.
Yeah, and the vast majority of time it's fine, or I need to make one setting, and that's easier to do than remember what the heck U1, U2, and U3 are. I did set things to them. I have no idea what they are.
Okay, well.
Can't remember. No idea. I'm sure there's something that I might have been action settings, but.
And if you're just talking about simple exposure settings or changing a picture control or changing a white balance, these are not things you generally need to worry about. I mean, they're just not, it's not worth it to save everything in a configuration. And one thing too is because over time you start to change your mind and what you like. And so you might have had settings that are set completely differently in a program bank. And then all of a sudden you've just changed things from the way you're used to shooting. But this case was a perfect use case for why the user bank, you know, the saved setting banks would be useful, because I put mine in U3, for example, because it's just there in the, you know, there. And if I switch that to U3 now, my camera is set up to not only be with the white balance and the manual exposure, the ISO set more or less to where I want it, but more importantly, it turns off the grid lines, it sets the black background for the LCD for the, you know, the when you're doing the readout. It sets all those timers the way that I want them. It can, you know, all of that stuff that I had set up got saved. And so the next time I go out, I don't need to use a 20-minute checklist and freeze my butt off and my fingers start to get icicles on them. It's like,
you know what we should do? It wasn't something we talked about in advance. We ought to make just some notes about what we would suggest people put in that U3 setting.
For night shooting?
For night shooting. Because it's not that straightforward. And we've talked about some of the things, and some of them are obvious, some of them less so. But it also includes things like, well, when you make that setting, put a fast lens on the camera. Mm-hmm. Because that will be the default aperture it goes to also. And if it's a little bit slower lens, it'll just go to the maximum right. aperture of that lens. And that's what behavior you want. What you don't want to do is set up all those settings while you've got a lens on that set to 5.6, because guess what you're going to get every time? And you're going to go, right. damn it.
Right. So I made mine with the 21.8, so I set it to 1.8. Now, if I put a slower lens on, no big deal. It'll just default to whatever wide open is.
2.8 or f4 or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And for our listeners who are Nikon shooters, if you're not a Nikon shooter, I'm sorry if we're boring you at this point, but if you go, it's in where you do this is from your setup menu. After you make all your adjustments in the camera, you go to the setup menu, which is the wrench icon in the Nikon menu. And right underneath where it says format memory cards, so it's literally the second choice, the second option. It says save user settings. And when you go in there, it'll say, okay, save user settings. And it'll say save to U1, save to U2, save to U3. And you just choose the one you want, you click it, and it overwrites whatever was in that bank with the way the camera is currently configured, and that's what you'll get back to. And so if you make changes while using that U3 setting and you want to save them, you need to go back and just make sure you resave those settings.
Right. If you're using a different camera, you'll just need to do a little bit of experimentation and see
right
what parameters are actually saved in their equivalent
right
settings. I think almost every modern camera has something like that now, but they do differ in terms of how they can be customized and what actually gets saved with those parameters. So that's something left to the listener.
Yeah. And the gotcha, there is a gotcha with the Nikon system, which is at least with these cameras, you cannot change exposure mode because you use the same dial. So if I put the camera to U3, it's going to pull whatever exposure mode the camera was set to when I was starting, you know, when I set it up. So that means if you were in program auto, it's going to go back to program auto. If you're in manual and you can't change the exposure setting. And when you get out of the user setting, all your settings go back to whatever the camera was left at.
Right.
So it's not as simple as saying, you know, so you need to make darn sure that the exposure mode that you choose is the one you intend to be using. And that's why we said for this night shooting, this is an applicable, it's a very solid use case because you are going to be just manual most of the time. You know, that's how you'll shoot.
Yeah.
So before we finish, but just
to be clear, even with the U3 kind of setting, you're going to want to have, in addition to an aperture that's got what you want, exposure mode like manual, and if it's manual, a shutter speed setting that somewhat makes sense. You're not having to go from 500th of a second all the way
right.
to 8 or 10 seconds, let's say.
I think I set mine to 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's what I would
do,
too.
Which is about the ballpark for where I'm going to be when it starts getting dark. 10 seconds. ISO 1600.
Yeah, we just both said the same thing. Yeah. and you know, you just get close and you shoot raw.
Yeah. And then the question, the last, I mean, obviously the other question was, is the 20 millimeter 1.8S, was that worth buying? And what I could say is that it was a definite optical improvement over the G lens. I've looked at images from both. And the G lens, while it's very good, I like the lens, it suffers from sort of two problems that you'll notice more with astrophotography because you're shooting it wide open or close to wide open. One is light mm-hmm. fall off. You can work with that, but it's noticeable. The other issue is something called coma aberration.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where in the corners of the frame, things that are pinpoints like stars, point sources of light, will sometimes look like they have a line through them. It's a dot with like a line, like a comma or a coma.
Yeah, it can look comet shaped. It can look like it has wings.
Yeah. And it's not something that's a huge, like a deal breaker by any means, but if you were picking an astro lens, that's usually what people start to look at is those kinds of optical characteristics. And what I can say without a doubt is while there may still be better lenses out there, the 20-1/8S does not suffer from that. It is much, much better and has a lot less light fall off as well. The images had better color. They were noticeably clearer and just fewer lens aberrations, meaning shooting it wide open or F2 or whatever, somewhere in that ballpark is very reasonable. You don't need to stop down to get better performance, which is kind of consistent with what we've been seeing with all of the S lenses we've tried.
Yeah. You know, just to reiterate something that we said earlier, a lens like that makes the most sense where you want to have it as a dual purpose lens, be able mm-hmm. to shoot astro, also shoot very wide. And I think that one works well with infrared too, which is one of your interests, right?
I think it's not as good as the 24, but it is still usable.
It's still
but
okay.
It's probably not a focal length I would gravitate towards for infrared necessarily, but mm-hmm. yeah, it's a possible. I need to go back and retest it, but I'm pretty sure the 21.8 was good, but not as good as say the 50, okay. 35, or 24.
Yeah, I guess the main point is if we were really doing this a lot, we'd go out and get ourselves one of the not horribly expensive manual focus, manual aperture, no electrical contact kind of lenses that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a variety of them with differing features, you know,
right.
Samyang ones, sometimes called Rokinons, Venus Optic, Laowa. There are several out there, and I'm not sure which is the absolute best one right now, but there are several good ones from everything I've heard. So that's probably what we would do if we did a lot. It would be worthwhile. And some of them are actually showing up with native Z mounts now, which is good.
I know that there's one from
more convenient.
There's a Venus Optics one that is native, and it gets very good marks for astro. You know, it's like it's not the cheapest one. It's about $700, but it's, you know, if you were doing this all the time, if you're gonna invest in a lens specifically for this purpose, you might as well invest in one that's gonna be decent. If you just want to play around, yeah, there are options that you can have for less money, but they won't be as well corrected regarding the
that mid 700 range seems to be the sweet spot.
Yeah,
for the better lenses,
and that's still several hundred dollars cheaper than an autofocus Nikon lens, so you can't mm-hmm. argue with that too much. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, we had fun, and then we defrosted, and, you know,
it was cold.
It just gets cold very rapidly here in the winter. It was so dry that we went from starting out in the low 40s, which was not a problem at all.
No,
that's to comfy. Very quickly, it was 25 Fahrenheit with a breeze.
and it was the breeze that was a real problem. So, yeah, the reason we stopped shooting is we were just too damn cold in our fingers, you know, because we were having to use thin gloves so that we could operate our cameras. We couldn't feel any button or anything anymore.
Yeah, it's hard enough with gloves as it is, but I mean, yeah, it was, but you know what, it was good to be outside, you know, somewhere where we could be safe and we have a spot, so hopefully. I ever want to do I know for sure that I could go back to this location with clients and teach some night photography for mm-hmm. people who are interested, because it's you know, it's not a spectacular spot, but it's a really easy logistically accessible area, and you know it's going to be fairly dark there. So and we even were able to see the Milky Way, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, it was pretty out there. I've shot in the spot before, but not at that time of day. And it's nice. A little bit short on good foregrounds, but you know, it's good to have a place where you can get a slightly darker sky.
Yeah, we were far enough away from the city because we went west out of Colorado Springs. So we were watching the sunset over the Collegiate Peaks out there? Is that we were watching?
Or was it a little bit further away, but yeah, you could see them
way
from
out
there.
Yeah, out there. And the Milky Way was out. And so anyway, it was fun stuff. If you got questions for us, we want to tell us where we screwed up. Please leave us a note on our Facebook page, facebook.com.
The wrong damn lenses.
Yeah, facebook.com.
When I use work.
Yeah, no, we're good. facebook.com/imagedoctors. We look forward to being with you again next week. Until then, happy shooting.
All right, bye-bye.